just take a moment to admire the fact that I just hit a fairway.
There's only two things that can happen. You can hit a good shot or a bad shot, so why waste time doing it?
And where I would go, wherever I set course records or whatever, I would be barefooted, drunk, playing golf, making every 20-footer I looked at.
Right at it! Home!
He's done it again!
This is the dumbest hole I've ever played in my life.
Come on then, Shane. Knock it close.
Shane Lowry is the Open champion.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Fairway Finders. We're on episode number 58. Look, it's been all over the news for the last few weeks. We've decided that it needs its own podcast. We are going to be talking about the LIV Tour. I'm, of course, joined by Donny and Steve. How are we, lads?
Good, Brew. Nice to have you back.
Brew, yeah, good to have you back, man.
Yeah, sorry I missed Monday, but...
I didn't
get the old heads up about the old caps, lads. I have a bit of FOMO here.
Well, I'm still going through COVID, so personal hygiene is not up to scratch. So I'm gonna choose to wear the cap today. That's all right.
And I just literally today I watched Hustle by like Adam Sandler's new movie on Netflix, and it's just class. Like, it's not winning Oscars necessarily, but it's a pretty simple story, but it's so much fun, and it reminded me of how much I love basketball. And I just literally saw my Raptors hat sat by the laptop, so it's on.
Yeah. Canadian Open this week as well, Donny. Raptors hat on, representing,
exactly.
Aren't you? Do you miss
exactly
it?
Well. Oh, it's so much. I mean, I was always a basketball fan, but you know yourself, it's really hard to watch basketball in Ireland because
that's
all the
fucking impossible. Yeah, yeah. Especially midweek as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Apart from like hanging out with you lovely chaps, it might have been my favorite part of Toronto was the Raptors and everything that went with it. So we'll be back next season. I mean, at least we're still a playoff team. But miles off.
True. Okay. So look, it is the big one. We've talked about it in a lot of previous podcasts. We've given our opinions on it. It is now time to have a full deep dive into this new LIV Tour.
Historic LIV Tour, you could say, bro.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, weird enough that I even tried to Google what LIV means, and it doesn't mean anything, apparently. Is that
no, it does.
What does that mean?
Do you know, it was going to be... So I didn't know this either.
Okay.
And out of curiosity, I went digging, and I was going to actually ask you boys. So it's pretty obscure. You guys don't know what it represents?
Not a clue. So
what it is LIV is the Roman numeral number for 54. 54 being one, the format, it's 54 holes. And then two, like traditionally, if you birdied every hole, you'd shoot a 54. So that's where it came from. And you might think that's hilarious and shite, but I actually think it might be my favorite aspect of the entire thing.
Clever. Yeah, at least a bit of
golf. It's 54 golf, as in 54 holes and, well, I don't know, 54 million quid to every cunt who goes and does it. and the rest, actually. That's what it actually stands for. And, like, we're going to get into it, but I noticed that the PGA Tour, now, their statement was piss weak when they were suspending players, but they actually referred to it as the Saudi Golf League, which was half embarrassingly amateurish and half absolutely hilarious and like vindictive.
Yeah, it's a dig. It has to be. It's not a mistake, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was a dig. Another great dig was on Sky Sports, and I'm not saying Sky are necessarily good guys because it's their vested interest to be against the LIV Golf Tour, but they had Graham McDowell, aka Alan Partridge, after his performances this week. And the caption came up, Graham McDowell, not 2010 US Open champion. No. Graham McDowell, world number 374.
Poor old G-Mac. Got a great laugh off the guy this week. Just this, the shit he's been coming out with.
He needs a minder.
It's excellent.
He needs a Tom Cruise to his Dustin Hoffman to help him around the place, because the shit that he said and the fucking... like the inadvertent puns that he was dropping. He talked about taking the moral high ground in his chat. The moral fucking high ground. He talked about him taking the moral high ground by resigning from the PGA Tour. And then he also said that the execution level of the Saudi Golf Tour, the LIV Tour, is why he's here.
Like, I think he's winding people up. I think
it has to be.
Yeah, he couldn't be
Has to be.
Probably the boys are back after the press conference laughing about how riled up everyone's getting about it. They probably have money on it. How many? They probably have like a bingo game where you have to try and for like $10 million side bet. Try and mention, you know, morals. Try and mention whatever else.
I am convinced it has to be like you cannot be that dumb. You just can't. It can't be true. It like you can't be that stupid.
Too many cold beers, maybe.
Too many cold beers. I did find it hilarious, and a lot of people who don't know Graham McDowell also found his accent the most bizarre in amongst the human species, which also entertained me.
His is just absolutely ridiculous. It makes me laugh every time I regularly watch that video of him doing his player profile around his house, or he's playing pool.
Who's Graham McDowell? Well, yeah, he's just a guy. He just likes some cold beers with the guys.
Golf.
Shoot some pool, you know. Just a regular guy.
The cool guy.
So, I guess before we get deep into the whole... the press conferences, reactions, etc. For those who may not, necessarily be too familiar with LIV, I'll just maybe give a really brief outline of the format for people, right? So the LIV Golf Invitational Series features two competitions occurring concurrently, an individual event and a team event. Can't wait till we get to the team event stuff and the names, but look, we'll get there. Seven events will take place over the course of the LIV Golf's four-month regular season. The eighth event will be a team event in late October in Miami, where teams compete against one another in a match play format to see who earns the inaugural LIV Golf Team Trophy. The individual events is just a normal competition played over 54 holes. There are no cuts, and the golfers with the lowest score after the 54 holes will be declared the winner, normal enough. The team events element of the competition is a bit different. Each event will feature 12 teams made up of four golfers, with LIV Golf approving a captain to each team. Those captains will then select three other players for their teams in a snake draft format each week, as the player pool will change from event to event.
The concept is something different. Like golf is just such a repetitive 72 holes, PGA Tour, European Tour, majors. It's such a, everyone's used to it now. So something like this, I actually think it is, if you take the methods or the backers away from it.
Controversial elements of this.
My brain still hasn't fully recovered from the old coronavirus. So,
hello, hackers. Yeah. Welcome to episode 57.
Oh,
Donny listened to himself there. I think is he. but yeah, you take away the background stuff of it. But it's actually, I think it's a really good concept. It's something the whole draft aspect of it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's something new. It's something, you know, you see these guys in a different light. You see them. Choosing between different players in a draft, as anyone in the schoolyard would have done when you're back picking teams. So yeah, it's something different, and I think it's a pity because it could have worked. Something like this could have worked very well alongside the other two tours, and potentially done the game of golf very good. I know I sound like Graham McDowell now saying the game of golf and all that, but it's a shame that it's come to what it has, because they're never going to work side by side together, but I think it's concept wise, I think it's very good.
Yeah. Also, just quickly, I'm going to just go over the whole payouts, because that's one of the biggest talking points, is how much the golfers are being paid, etc. So just to give everyone a quick idea of the overall payouts that the LIV Tour are looking to give, right? So we have the regular season event. The first seven events of the season features a $25 million purse, $20 million to be split over the 48 golfers who played a part in the tournament. A winner of each of these tournaments will get $4 million, with the last place in each tournament getting $120,000. The remaining $5 million will be dispersed amongst the teams that finish in the top three places. The first team getting $3 million, $1.5 million for second place, $500,000 third place. At the end of the individual events, players who have participated in at least four events will divide what amounts to a top-heavy $30 million bonus pool. Sorry, I keep laughing just how big these numbers are. The individual champion will net $18 million. The second place golfer, $8 million. The third place, $4 million, and so on. The winning team after the season finale will receive a cool $16 million divided up between the four people. However, all teams that take part will take home a pretty penny. For example, the last place team will bring in $1 million in tournament earnings. So overall, we're looking at a lot.
So a question I have, like genuinely, and I assume it's more a clarification. All those numbers there, 16 million, 18 million for the individual winner. So like Dustin Johnson's 100 million quid and Phil's 200 million quid are also are entirely separate entities.
Entirely separate signing bonuses.
So, yeah, completely different. Not based on performance.
So Phil exists, turns up and gets 200 million quid. Phil's 51. The likelihood that his game is going to fall apart in the next like two or three years is relatively high. You know, he could get the yips. Like, I mean, something could go on his back. So he turns up and he could stink the place out every season. And for finishing last, take home $1 million and he's already got 200 million. So, yeah, and I feel like we don't need to even have to, like, point out potential issues with that.
Yeah, to put a bit more context on it as well for any listeners in terms of prize money. So there's two events happening, two other events happening this week. There's obviously the Canadian Open. So the winner of the Canadian Open takes home 1.56 million after 4 days of golf in a 156 man field. The other event that's happening in the DP World Tour is actually a pretty cool event, the mixed Scandinavian mixed, and the winner share for that is $333,000 if you win that tournament, which again is a 156 person field. So just for turning up to this LIV Golf event, no cost, 3 days, you're guaranteed just about half the winner's share of the DP World Tour event if you actually come last. So like, I don't know.
And also, Steve, that's completely not taking into account, as we already mentioned, the sign-on bonus.
Oh yeah. So yeah, which is somewhere
bare minimum, like the worst person in this LIV Golf tournament so far, on the bare minimum they will make this weekend is $6.5 million. The bare minimum.
Yeah, six from sign on fee and then
sign on plus whatever. Yeah, like $6.2 million, let's say, is the absolute bare minimum someone's making. That is insane.
You factor all that in, and obviously it's a no brainer to go and take the money, but unfortunately, it's not that simple because there's a lot of concerns, a lot of controversy, everything like that around it. So I suppose that's probably the main talking point of all this.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, for me, look, it is hard to know. Look, as you said, I think the ideas are really cool around this. It's always good to have more competition, be it another tour, but it's just all of this controversy around it. And my biggest qualm, as I said before we started recording, was everyone's talking about, oh, there's going to be amateurs, there's going to be up and coming players from the Asian Tour, et cetera, on this. But there's only 48 golfers total that will be taking part in the LIV Tour. So if you start getting more and more
every event, Brew, yeah, every event.
So every event,
48, yeah. So they could be different players. They won't necessarily be the same 48.
But I mean, at the end of the day, if you have, you know, 30 PGA players and 18 DP World Tour players, they're surely going to get preference over these lads. I'm not too sure on that one. I'm just guessing.
I'm laughing at that. There will be a conversation that takes place between Greg Norman and Scott Vincent and Andy Ogletree, which is like, hey man, welcome to the third. Thanks so much for joining. We're going to change golf. We're growing a game. This is good. Here's your money. Our next tournament is in Portland, but Patrick Reed and a few others and Bryson are coming here. So here's your money and fuck off.
Yeah, but that's exactly my point. Like, so I mean, I don't know. I mean,
it's like obviously we're dancing around the whole controversy. So in terms of the crux of the controversy, what the Saudi government are doing here. So the chairman of the PIF, which is the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, the chairman is Mohammed bin Salman. So he's got an $800 billion fund that is all oil money that is can be used to invest and divest the country's wealth. So he knows that he has finite wealth here in terms of oil money, and regardless of any geopolitical landscapes, eventually the oil will run out, and hopefully we stop fucking burning it because we're all going to burn alive on the planet. So he is using that $800 billion to divest his money into different areas. And the most spectacularly useful way he can do this is he needs that money to infiltrate Western economies and to do business with the West, because there's trillions and trillions of dollars sitting there in the US, and the Saudis are already heavily involved. I mean, you know, it has been pointed out to me, Ireland had 70 million of Saudi imports in 2020. But what the shtick is, they're using sport to cleanse the image of the Saudi regime as being oppressive, as locking up members of the LGBT community, dismembering journalists in consulates. That's a reference to Jamal Khashoggi. They executed 81 men in a day in March, and some of those men did some really bad shit, by the way. Some of those men were convicted of rape and some awful things. Some of them were killed for non-violent crimes, so crimes around their ideology and way of thinking. So all this horrible stuff, and sport is being used to legitimize these guys. So it's very easy and very straightforward and non-complicated for me to see that Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, Sergio Garcia, Graham McDowell, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed, all of these guys are being paid enormous amounts of money to have what is a fucking fantastic life, like extremely fantastic. They have to play 8 tournaments a year plus the majors, and then they can piss off and they'll earn more in a year than they have done for most of their careers, right? So their lives have gone from being an excellent life that involved a lot of time away from your family to an absolutely surreal life that involves more time with your family, right?
Dream.
And so under a normal circumstance.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Do you take the money in that situation? You're being paid far more to do far less. Normal situation, is that a no-brainer? Yeah, it's a no-brainer. Except the price of that is your character, your values, your morals, your reputation, everything, because you are now actively a cheerleader for a murderous dictator of an oppressive regime who kills people very regularly and oppresses people all the time. And you're going, actually, he's all right, because I want to talk about golf and I'm here to grow the game. And he's fine because he's given me 200 million quid in the case of Phil Mickelson. So like, it's not a complicated concept to think that this is entirely morally bankrupt and disgusting. The conversation and the debate to be had is do the golfers care? No. Should they care? And I suppose that's maybe the crux of the debate. So for me, like, listen, we spoke about this in the WhatsApp group during the week. If in some mad universe Saudi Golf came to us and said, listen, we want you to exclusively cover the live tour, and we're going to give the podcast like a bunch of money and you can all quit your jobs, I'm out. No, thank you. Thank you very, but fuck off. And that would be my honest answer. And that's on record. And I've said it a million times. It won't happen. I know that, but I couldn't take that money constantly knowing where it comes from. And I know, sorry, I'm on a monologue here, but I'm just going to wrap it up.
Yep.
The reply to that argument is, oh yeah, but your phone's made in China, or your golf clubs are made in China, or, you know, you watch the Formula One, the Saudi Grand Prix, and all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And my response to that is, yeah, okay, the degrees of separation there are wider. The ability to affect that situation is null and void. And that argument sounds to me like, yeah, well, I mean, you're working with the Saudis as well because you live on planet Earth too, and so do they. And because they convert oxygen into carbon dioxide, and so do you, it means you're in business with them. That's how I find it, because it's a messy world. It's a totally imperfect world. There is a shit ton of bad stuff that happens. So much bad shit and immoral shit happens. But do you ignore all of it because you can't address? Do you ignore any of it because you can't address all of it? And I can't do that. Like, this is fucked up and wrong, and it's going to happen. It's a really sad day for golf yesterday. It really was, because there was an hour of like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then from what people who were watching the live tour were saying, they were going, this is cool. But how's the fucking scoring work? And where's the leaderboard? And what does this shot mean? And does that put matter? And what the fuck is going on? And am I just watching lads out having a fucking stroll here? And I noticed that today the stream numbers came down like about 50% from yesterday. Yep. So I think that's, I'm hoping that continues. And people are like, I'm going to check this out because it's new. And then after 20 minutes, they're like, well, there's lots of shots and it's cool, but there's no compelling sporting emotion storyline here. So click off, fuck off.
Yeah, I mean, I think just really quickly, I want to go back to a really good point I think you made. And I want to add to it is, you said, like, should I be kind of, I guess, you know, the fact that you watch Formula One that might be in Saudi Arabia, for example. I think it is interesting because this is not the first time a sport has been in Saudi Arabia. The Formula One has been there for years. For example, boxing is a great example. Apparently Usyk and Joshua 2 is also happening in Saudi Arabia next month, for example. And UFC went to Saudi Arabia, and you can give probably 100 other fucking World Cup, for example. You know, you can give 101 other reasons,
another
or examples of this, but yeah, it seems like this is the first real time that there seems to be absolute uproar over it, which I think is very interesting.
Well, the reason I think it is, and I've seen on Twitter a lot, and a lot of people who are kind of, you know, not as deeply entrenched into golf as maybe we are, and this rumbling an evolving situation is like, oh, the European Tour have been taking Dubai's money for years, and the human rights violations in the UAE are worse now than they were in 2008 when they struck the deal to have the race to Dubai. All of that is entirely true. Do I think that was wrong? Yeah, of course, dude, that was fucked up. But it's a great illustration of how effective sports washing is, because I mean, if I look back on it now, we were invited to go to Dubai in November to cover the golf. And me and Steve were like, this is going to be great. This is going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. But now I'm retrospectively thinking to myself, well, that society in the UAE is not as an extreme example of an oppressive, awful state as the Saudis. They're not the same. They both have like similar arcs in terms of oppression, in terms of especially migrant labor. It's like if, you know, like MBS is like a high ranking Bond villain, whereas the UAE are not to that level, but they do bad shit. Yeah. And so do Qatar, and so do everyone else. And people have covered it for 15 years. It's just that it's reached a crescendo now, because the transparency at which sports washing is being done, it's getting more and more transparent. Some of that is due to technology, because we have all these brilliant journalists on Twitter who are reporting all these stories all the time, and it's really topical, and we live in this digital age and everybody's addicted to their phones. But like, I really, when people say that, oh, you didn't care 15 years ago. No, a shitload of people cared 15 years ago, and 10 years ago, and 5 years ago. It's just not enough to change this. And the people who think it's bullshit and are outraged by it, we can't actually change it. And like, it's unfair for the golfers to be held to this high moral standard. And like, having Poulter and Westwood asked a question about, you know, if Vladimir Putin was running a tour, would you play? And they were like, that's speculation. I don't have to answer that question. Tiny, tiny, tiny bit of sympathy for them, because that shouldn't be a question that a sports athlete is asked. Now, they've been asked it because of their decisions. So they kind of, I think it's unfair that the golfers are being held to this moral, like this moral standing that we don't even hold our own politicians to. So I get that. I totally concede that. It's like, but are we going to start somewhere or are we not? Like, are we just going to fucking leave it or not? And if it's golfers that have to be the ones that get, you know, are the collateral damage and get vilified for it and told this is wrong, this is fucked up, you should know better. Like, it's not life-changing to these boys. The top guys who are accepting the money, Bryson DJ, who's the third richest guy, I think he's earned $74 million on the PGA Tour. It does not change his life, that money. It gives him a little bit more freedom, but he could just easily just go, that's wrong, that's bullshit, I'm not going to do it. And he doesn't.
Yep.
Right.
And so look, not accountable to me.
I agree with most of what you're saying, Donny, right? Well, I agree with everything what you're saying about why it's wrong, why it's sports washing. So I'm not very opposed to the whole live golf thing. I think it's probably it's about time that something has come along to challenge the PGA Tour. You could probably call it a dictatorship on the PGA Tour, or definitely a monopoly if maybe dictatorship is the wrong word. So the biggest issue that I have with all of this is just the pure hypocrisy of the people who are most outraged by this live golf tour happening, right? So the first time an event was played in the Arabian Peninsula, which is United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, it was the 1989 European Tour, where they play the Dubai Desert Classic for the first time. And from looking into it a bit more, the event was, I'll just read out, I found this pretty funny actually. The event was described as, the tournament is part of a wider strategy via a government program called Dubai Golf to develop both professional and casual golf tourism in Dubai. It has historically had one of the strongest fields on the European Tour due to promotional, in inverted commas, money paid to top golfers. So essentially what that says, in other words, and what we know now is basically sports washing, is what that event was, first of all. So you have these journalists, these people who are still in the game. They made their name, they made their career, etc., off covering events like these, off flying to Dubai for 20, 25 years, speaking about how good things are over there, how great the course are, how great the field is. And now these are the same people that are coming out saying sports washing is absolutely wrong. Anybody going to take this money is morally, you know, empty. And as far as I'm concerned, it's just these guys that are actually now looking over their shoulder saying, fuck, we had such a sweet gig for the last 20, 30 years. Our livelihood is now being threatened because there's a good chance that the DP World Tour might crumble. That, and the fact that it's called the DP World Tour, I think says enough about how people have stayed silent for so long. And now it's come back to bite them. And actually, do you know what? It's so much so, right, that the UAE, just to list you off the series of events that the UAE now has in its country. And let's not put it down, Donny, like the UAE has a horrendous human rights record. Is it the same as Saudi Arabia? It's not, but it's not far. Like, I actually did a bit of research into it, and it's
shocking. Yeah,
it's brutal, right? So
the horrible working conditions for migrant workers. When you're in Dubai as well, they treat like those who work in the services industry, taxis, working in bar, they're treated like second class citizens. It's a fucked up place, and golf is very guilty of this sports washing before.
Absolutely, it is. So because these same journalists, right, stayed silent, they didn't feel like reporting on it back then because they were like, well, I'm earning a living off covering six events out in the desert every year, so I'm not going to speak out about how bad it is.
That's where my view would slightly deviate. So I entirely accept that. I absolutely accept that, and I hope that I try to be as consistent with my convictions around this as I possibly can. Where I would deviate slightly is, I think human beings are really flawed in so many ways, and I think lots of judgment calls are made erroneously. And I think it's possible to conceive that back then, the transparency at which this, like, sports washing was being undertaken was more obscured than what it is now. I think I'm not giving those journalists an out and going over. And listen, we are those journalists. We went over gleefully. So am I a hypocrite in the sense that I went over gleefully to Dubai to cover a golf tournament and I loved it? Yeah, I am totally. I hold my hand up. So I'm trying to learn from past mistakes. Like, I think everybody and every person tries to learn from their past mistakes and thinking that things are wrong and things are right. You can't change what's happened back then. It can't be changed. And it's a fair point that, like, those journalists who are banging the drum now saying this is so wrong likely benefited from the cash injection that came from the UAE. So you're just swapping one villain out for another. But I don't think you can use that occurrence as justification to let this one slide. Like, it was wrong back then, and it should have been dealt with, and they should have been told to fuck off back then, quite frankly. Now, it was never going to happen because, you know, money reigns over everything. But there's an opportunity now to actually stand up. And if you take the football example, it was the fans that fucked that Super League, which will come back guaranteed. Although the Super Leagues, it deviates a little bit from sports washing because these were guys who were trying in an industry where it's more difficult to make big money. They were trying to make big money. But I just think, like, looking at historical events, like, you learn from historical events, but you can't then conveniently, you know, blame someone for how they thought about something 15 years ago. Like, all of us, our opinions and our knowledge about the world and all the complexity that's in it, it increases over time. We get more information, or we learn a different perspective. We read something we didn't know back then, and then we adapt our beliefs. Like, I don't think anyone can argue that this LIV golf bullshit is wrong. It's fucked up. These golfers, what they're doing is not illegal. They are self-interested shills, fucking cheerleaders for this murderous bastard, right? I think we can all agree it's wrong. I think if the only argument...
I don't think it is wrong. I think
it's wrong, but sure, they did wrong stuff in the past, so fuck it, like.
I don't think it is wrong. I think where the money is coming from isn't a good thing at all. But I think players going to play golf for more money to do less work is there's nothing wrong with that at all. Is it the right thing morally? You know, probably not. Well, definitely not, I would say. But the PGA Tour are going to China in October to play the WGC HSBC World Golf Championships. China is a whole other conversation about how terrible things are over there.
But is that a sports washing event, though? I mean, you could argue it is.
Well, it is. Yeah, of course it is.
Like, are they the same?
Yeah, I would say it. But
they're
I
would say at least, yeah.
These, like, the same journalists, because they're heavily paid by and heavily biased towards the PGA Tour, they'll find a way around it to say, oh, well, this is why I'm going to cover it, and this is why it's okay for the PGA Tour to go here, because they're paying my wages. So,
like, I think just the one thing I would say in terms of, like, it's their job to cover it, and like, so
yeah, but there's covering it, Donnie. There's covering it, and there's being completely.
What I would kind of love to do is go out to Saudi, cover it, and fucking and eviscerate the tournament and eviscerate everything that stands for, and do it from a place where I can see all of the problems and all the issues with it.
You could have done that in Dubai, though, couldn't you? And we had a great time, didn't we?
We did, yeah. No, we did. Yeah.
And effectively, so we went to Dubai just as DP World, who are now the sponsor, massive logistics company, in Dubai. So we went there just as they were signed up to take over. And what did they do, Donny? They put on a lovely event for us on a Thursday, par 3 tournament for members of the media at Jemariah Golf Estates, par 3 course under lights, food, drinks, everything all covered. Didn't have to put your hand in your pocket once. So, like, why were they doing that? Was it because they think it's well deserved, or is it because they want you to look at DP World and the new sponsorship?
I'm now wrangling with the mistake that I made in going that if,
well, it's
if
not
I,
a mistake it's like it's not well, a mistake
well, no it is to me no because I believe strongly in how wrong this is. But to come back on the point of covering it, like, football journalists are go like I would go to Saudi to what I didn't do in this instance with Dubai is that it's like, I mean, that's been a settled, it's been a settled agreement for 15 years. So it's not exactly a hot potato, but you go to Saudi to uncover the human rights abuses, and you would go gladly and willingly to find the truth and find all the things that are wrong, the things that actually are worth reporting on, rather than these fucking stupidly named teams knocking a ball around when no one gives a bollocks because they're already made. Like, there's no sporting integrity at all. So there's no point, like, there's no point in even covering the Sliv Golf Tour in a sporting context of like, here we have a historical moment. Lee Westwood has just made the first par in Live Golf history. Who gives a fuck? Live Golf was nothing to
it. It is. It's historic. It is historic.
The first winner, of the Team Golf Live event, when golf has 200 years of history and tournaments, and even places like, you know, the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill has got all this rich history and memorial. And remember, the PGA Tour was built on philanthropy as well. I'm not, the PGA Tour are not good guys, by the way.
Yeah, let's not hold the PGA Tour up as allegedly a non-profit organization who can somehow whip an extra 200 million in prize money out of their back arse just because they needed to. So where has that money been for the last?
The last thing I would do is canonize the PGA Tour. Like the PGA Tour brought this on themselves because those fuckers have been so allergic to the thought of innovation in golf. They've been so like that was a big fundamental joke in Happy Gilmore, which is 20 years old, was how stuck up golf is and the people who run golf is, and that your man in the office like getting kicked off the tour, he seems a bit different. Like that has been the narrative of the PGA Tour for 20 years. Like they fucked this so badly. They have,
because they thought they were untouchable, Donnie. They thought they were untouchable. Really, so and now they're not. And this is where the panic is coming. Now all the morals are coming out of the closet now, saying, oh, this is morally wrong, that's morally wrong. Like the PGA Tour have no, and the USGA have no leg to stand on.
The cheek of them as well, because in the PGA Tour, in their shitty statement for banning players, were like, it's all, you know, all about money, money, money. Whereas when for the PGA Tour, it's all about money, money, money. Like, they're a shark, just a bigger shark has come along.
Exactly what you just said there, right? Wasn't it that was it that Monty and Nick Faldo were brought from the European Tour to the PGA because they were basically offered more money, and there was fucking war over it back in the day. I remember it, like, and people couldn't believe it, the scum of Monty and Faldo going over to the PGA and leaving the like European Tour just for money. And that's pretty much exactly what's just happened now again. Just a bigger shark, bigger fish has come along, offered a way better deal for the golfers. Don't get me wrong, it's a shitty, unmoralistic, you know, deal. But, I mean, look, I'll be perfectly frank. If I was a golfer, like, you know, Charles Schwartzel, who probably is, you know, has his best years behind him, and I was offered 50 mil to go to this, I'd be on the next fucking plane, lads. And if that makes, and that, no, if there's not, no, if that, I, that makes me a shit person, 100% it does, morally. Look, at the end of the day, as I said before, unfortunately, we're in a world that we're so consumed by money. It's a shit way to be. It's an awful way to be. Our grandparents, our great grandparents were never like that. They made money enough to live, and it's just completely changed. And that's just the way it is now. But I'm not going to sit here and lie and say, if we were got a call to say, would we do the commentary? I know you wouldn't. I know you'd say no, Donnie. I'd say yes.
But you know what?
You'll be over there, bro.
In the situation, lads, if that hypothetical, unlikely situation came to pass, I would realize myself that I am the fucking idiot, that I am the dumb person. And I would know that at the time. And I would still say no, knowing that it's a stupid decision. It's because, and I'm not fucking Mother Teresa. Like, obviously I'm not. There's all sorts of bad shit and bad traits and all sorts that I have. But I just couldn't. I'd be awake at night thinking, I'm just taking money off a bunch of really bad fuckers that do really bad stuff. And it's not that I just purchased a product from an organization who hires a Chinese production company to make that. Like those line separation, like me buying a TaylorMade driver and the TaylorMade driver is made in China. Like I don't look at that and say, oh, I'm
Like in a sweatshop. Yeah. Yeah,
like I do think degrees of separation are important. Like literally Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, they can do whatever they want. They're not doing anything illegal, but they now literally work. Their boss murders journalists, executes people for nonviolent crimes, locks up homosexuals, only has just started to allow women to drive. All this stuff. That's the like that's literally their what their boss does. The line of separation is like it's direct. The PIF, the chairman of it is Mohammed bin Salman. It's his money. And to think that Mohammed bin Salman has not been involved in this at some point and had conversations with Greg Norman is ridiculous. I know he's
He definitely has. But like
this is a huge part of his shtick is to get legitimized in the West because that's
can I ask it. Can I ask it, Donnie? You mentioned there, so they're getting paid directly by this, you know, dictator, whatever terms used, right? So he's paying Live Golf for paying DJ. What's the difference between that and the head of the UAE paying the DP World Tour and then the DP World Tour paying Rory 3 million whatever for turning up?
There's not much difference. There's very little difference. They're analogous situations.
This is what I'm saying. So why should DJ not take $125 million?
Because it's the right thing to do.
But then we shouldn't do anything.
So what I believe very strongly is that a decision that involves morality, this is the right thing to do, this is the wrong thing to do, should be self-contained within that decision. And when you bring in past situations or, well, that guy did it and this guy did it 10 years ago and they did it 15 years ago and he did it up the road 20 minutes ago. That is when humanity slides into literally the pit of hell.
I'd say we're already there, to be honest.
I think we're 20 feet down and we're digging 20 feet further.
If you're in hell and you have $200 million, you can buy a shitload of coolers and keep yourself nice and cool.
Exactly. No, like we are totally fighting a losing battle. It's just I've realized the fallacy of where I feel about Live Golf. And when I think that these guys are just morally bankrupt, and how does Ian Poulter look at his kids? He'll look at his kids fine, because in his mind's eye, he's like, you know, it doesn't bother me. My kids are going to have
they're multimillionaires. His grandkids are multimillionaires. He's fucking probably looking at them going, I'm the best man ever.
There's the company.
Always deliver.
I'm not a religious person at all. Total bollocks as far as I'm concerned. But I like to think I'm a moral person and an idealistic person. And that I will, if I ever am faced with a decision involving morality, that I will do the right thing as opposed to doing the convenient thing.
And that's fine. And honestly, I do genuinely think you are a very moral person. I really do. I'm not taking the piss now. But at the end of the day, I do think there's being moral and there's being rational. And I think now in today's day and age, 99% of people are rational rather than moral. And you hang a huge bag of cash over someone, the rationality in their mind goes, yeah,
cool. Rude, that's absolutely a fucking great point. That is
and that's just great point. Yeah, that's we can clip that up, because I mean I think that at the end of the day is the overall qualm of this whole thing, is it's morality versus rationality. And unfortunately, so many more people are in this bucket than the morality bucket.
I'm always really hesitant to reduce complex issues down to a simple sentence or to a simple thought. But I think you've nailed it there, that it's rationality and pragmatism over any kind of moral. Because ultimately, the only way, like moral obligations and morals in general can only be set at a societal level, and they need the input of everyone in that society. So if you don't have the input of anyone in that society, then morals are actually kind of a fucking nuisance, because you'll just end up undermining your own prosperity in this case for this noble cause that actually most people really don't care about anymore.
I also have to say, right, this is just, I'm not trying to go off topic, but just really quickly, right, I understand where you're coming from, Donnie. I understand that they morally shouldn't say yes, but in my opinion, you could literally apply that to 90% of people on like Earth, right? And I'll explain why. Take, for example, one of the biggest industries in the world that employs billions of people, Big Pharma, are one of the biggest fucking crooks on this planet. What they do is disgusting. The margin they add to life-saving medicines is revolting, right? And so, and Big Pharma touches so many other industries. They're all linked. They're all umbrellaed. So that does that mean everyone who works under that umbrella is morally wrong? Because at the end of the day, that head person pays everyone's wages all the way down the ranks. Same goes with the Soccer World Cup in Qatar. Does that mean every player that goes there is a fucking moral scumbag? I mean, you can literally give examples for thousands of different, you know.
Bang on, bro.
You're spot on. You are spot on.
And like, I'm totally agreeing with you. I do think this is wrong. I do. But however, I just think it's laughable that people are making such a big fuss of, because why the fuck is no one else making any other fuss of anything else? Nothing. It's just this. Like, literally, I know I said it earlier, the Usyk Anthony Joshua fight was announced today. It's in Saudi Arabia. Not a fucking peep.
Brew boxing is always, that's expected.
Oh, I know. But I'm just saying, like, well, that's
done by crooks. Valid.
No, and you know, you're valid. Like, as I kind of mentioned before, and I had a sort of at length conversation with a friend of mine about this whole LIV golf issue, and he made some quite like pertinent and relevant points to me about, some of this is whataboutery, but not all of it is whataboutery. And like, fundamentally, it just leaves me feeling quite, you feel quite depressed about the state of the world and the state where it's in. You kind of have to let it go a little bit, because it's just how it works. And
yeah, and unfortunately, we've no power to change it.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah. So I think, like, to be honest, I think we may tie off the whole moral aspect of this, because I'd love to talk a little bit more about practicalities about, well, one thing I'd love to do is, there's a shit ton of funny stuff over the last couple of days. Like, so to reel off a couple, right, and jump in, lads, because some of it was hilarious. Right, first one, absolutely gas. Eamon Lynch tweeted a fucking A4 sheet yesterday, which had bullet-pointed answers, scripted answers for the golfers to answer in the press conference. One was about the money grab, and bullet-pointed. One was about like why they're playing. It was like, I love playing golf. It's a great opportunity to grow the game. Every sports get better with better competitions. The game of golf is bigger than one tour. And then on the money grab, it was like, there are a number of factors making my decision. Money was one of those factors. All these canned answers, and they all totally like adhered to what they said. Like GMAC was up all night reading his lines.
Yeah, they fucking were hilarious. Nearly verbatim.
And then that one, but the other funny line from one of the press conferences was like Taylor Gooch, you know, and I kind of had a bit more respect for Taylor than a lot of them. He was like, he disagreed about it being sports washing, but then he just went, listen, I'm not that smart. I'm a golfer. I try and get a little ball in the hole, and that's hard enough to think of, so I don't really think about these things. And I was like, do you know what? That's honest.
Yeah,
like,
he's to be fair honest, enough. Yeah. Respect. What also, I have to say, Phil, in the
midlife crisis, Will.
Phil wearing, was it either a practice round or just before the tournament kicked off?
No, first round, bro.
First round.
He was wearing it, yeah.
Wearing an Augusta top is the ballsiest thing I have ever, literally the ballsiest thing I've ever seen a player do.
You know
do,
what
like,
he did on the second tee box?
No.
It wasn't actually picked up by many people. He changed it. He had two black jackets that were identical. One of them had the blacked out Augusta National logo, and the other one didn't. So he only wore it for a hole.
For like, one, that's outrageous. That's like, outrageous.
These boys are genuinely laughing their fucking bollocks off at everyone who's outraged. They are.
One thing I will say though, right, just really quickly, I know we're talking about the funniest stuff, but I have to say this one point before I forget saying it.
Yes.
There is aspects of this, be it if it fails or not fails, that I really think the PGA should look at. Like the shotgun starts we mentioned. You know, there's a lot of different aspects of this that could be incorporated into making the DP and PGA tours a lot better, which I again think is a good thing for golf. I think it's a good thing for any sport, but again, not tying into all morality side of it. I do think there are a lot of aspects of this that it could work a lot. You know, having a smaller calendar, I think is not a bad thing. Also, on saying that now, though, they said it was going to be 12 events, and now it's next year they're talking about having 15 events, and it's just going to grow and grow and grow. And eventually, it is going to be, it's going to go from 4 months to 8 months to nine months to a year.
Brew, I think that's a response of basically a fuck you to the PGA Tour, like they, like, and not trying to be Greg Norman's PR man here, Andy, but I would assume they would have loved, and it was never, to be fair, it was never going to happen, but I would assume that they would have loved the PGA Tour to be like, all right, listen, you can take the players there for 8 weeks of the year. Like they could have sat down, Jay Monahan could have sat down, probably would like to shut down on Greg Norman.
Yeah, his neck, he would. Whatever was left of his neck, yeah, he would.
The two of them could have sat down together and said, look, you know, so basically Jay Monahan is so arrogant and so up his own arse that he said, yeah, look, come at me, this isn't going to take off, whatever. He could have sat down with Greg Norman and said, look, we'll give you six events, we'll sign releases for PGA Tour players for six events, you can pay him what you want, don't touch him with the mate. Like he could basically put down a man.
He could have IPL'd it, because the IPL in cricket is a great example here. The IPL is 8 weeks, might even be 7 weeks of the year. And what happened with the IPL was all of the, so the ICC, who are, you know, the global body for cricket, and all the test teams, it's basically just run by India, Australia and England. They said, right, listen, IPL, we'll let you have an auction, sign the players that you want, and they can leave and miss 6 weeks of international cricket a year. And they basically cut off their arm to let the rest of the body survive. And the IPL now exists in this little contained window. And thanks to Jay Monahan's arrogance, this is going to become a civil war. Like it's a full civil war instead of a nefarious circus act.
Instead of a partnership, I mean, I was going to say a perfect example, Don, and even, you know, cricket has the IPL, they also have the Big Bash, and players are allowed to go down to that, and they tried to do it in a time that it's not overlapping with serious competitions. Like, they could easily say, look, lads, in, you know, when we have a few of those months, like, you know, some of January, a bit of February, maybe a bit of November, there's, you know, there's obviously that once the FedEx Cup kind of ends, there's one or two kind of hairy fairy things and that's it, and then the kind of season wraps up. Like,
that is fuck all easily, that happens.
Yeah, you could have easily just said, look, you can have that month, November's yours, have 6 weeks between November and mid-December, go have your six tournaments, go for it, and you can have your team events, all that crack, all you want, and you can have your finales first week in Jan, and then come mid-Jan, then they're back on tour, cool, no problem, done. And again, morally wrong. However, at least then that way they're somewhat working together. Whereas, as you mentioned before, legally the PGA are kind of fucked. Like they've technically banned them, but I really don't know if that's going to stand up in court, lads. I really don't.
They're too big. They're too, in terms of if we want to just move the conversation towards what happens from here.
Yeah.
And I just, the one thing I was going to mention with the funny stuff is, Alan Shipnuck wasn't let into Phil Mickelson's press conference yesterday and sent Greg Norman a text message and put it on Twitter, and it's fucking hilarious. He sends Greg Norman a text message, just got forcibly removed by some of your goons. Could you let me know what's happening? Or did you know about this? And Greg Norman's photographed behind them and texts them back, thanks for letting me know, didn't know. There's a photograph of Greg
Norman. The face on him. The face on him is the greatest thing ever. Yeah, yeah.
Fucking funniest thing ever.
A comic moment, but
it was very funny.
I'd say all this is just wine. Like, I'd say all these lads just love winding people up as well. Like Norman saying, "Nah, I didn't." Like he couldn't be serious. Nah, I didn't know about that when he's standing right behind him. Like he's, I'd say they're all just laughing away at everybody.
Well, they are. The rich people are laughing at the rest of us.
Like the DiCaprio meme. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or the Goodfellas, God rest there.
Ray
Liotta, by the way. Or the Goodfellas meme. Like,
yeah, exactly.
In terms of what happens from here. So for me, there are two big questions that we'll find out really soon, and they're going to dictate where this goes from here. So the first question is, the PGA Tour and Jay Monahan now have to go crawling to, they can go crawling to the USGA and the RNA and say, hey, ban these guys from the Opens. If you ban them from the Open Championship and the US Open, they're not the Opens. So that's out. The only one that they have that can bail them out is Augusta National. The Masters can ban the live players. I don't think they will, because Masters are self-interested. They don't like, they don't want to lose, you know, six of the last 12 winners of the Masters are now live golfers. They don't want to lose those boys. Like DJ, DJ, Bubba, Phil.
I think Phil wearing that jacket weird. Was basically, I fucking dare you to ban me. Genuinely, yeah. I think that's what it meant. Him going, I fucking dare you to ban
and
me.
I don't think the Masters will. And I think if they do, Liv will come back and create their own Masters. Like, I know the Masters now has heritage and history, but it was only, you know, the Masters was devised in the 1930s. And that was like 50, 60 years into the history of golf, you know? It was considered a joke for a while. It's only in the last like 30 years that people are like, oh, the Masters are special.
Donnie, let's not forget the Masters was a place where only women are, no women were allowed, and only white guys were allowed to tee it up as well. So yeah, they're not exactly
it was built on a plantation.
Although you can't really beat them with a 60-year-old stick at the same
time. Look, you can beat whatever you want.
One thing I will say, Donnie, you did say they'll make their own Masters, whatever. One thing that I think they will fucking do, because they pretty much are already started it, is I think all these players are now not allowed to play a Ryder Cup. I think they'll make their own Ryder Cup. And I think that's why they've introduced this team game, is to start and see how they can do it a bit differently, use this team game as a bit of a warm-up, and come 2 years' time, they'll go, we're making our own Ryder Cup. It'll be
has there been an official statement on that yet, though? That you are banned from
Yes,
there has.
Ryder Cup is you are now ineligible for the Ryder Cup.
Any so the team events, like the Ryder Cup is essentially the PGA Tour versus the DP World Tour now, only European Tour.
And also the President's Cup, right?
And the DP.
I don't know. Do the world rest of the world team have a, it doesn't even matter.
But have the DP World Tour said that as well?
Yeah.
The Ryder Cup is, they definitely are now ineligible. Well, sorry. The US, I've read the US players are 100% ineligible. It's still TBD.
And Poulter was asked about it, because obviously Ian Poulter's missed the Ryder Cup, and he says, I'm not finished with my Ryder Cup legacy, my Ryder Cup story, paraphrasing, but something along the lines of this.
Yeah.
And he said that, decisions can change, things can change, and he expects that he'll still be able to play Ryder Cup.
I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised because I'd seen the PGA come out saying everyone is, you know, a uniform ban, but I haven't, like the DP World Tour been silent, saying nothing, waiting to see how it all plays out.
Well, the DP World Tour face extinction now. I don't know what the fuck they're going to do. Like, it's a shark that's been eaten by a bigger shark.
Literally the shark,
you old bastard. the other big question that needs to be answered, that will be answered shortly, is, and this is very pertinent to the future of LIV Golf, if it expands as it's going to, is they have just applied today for their tournaments to be incorporated into the official golf world rankings. And it's now up to that entity. And I don't know if that's its own entity. I think it might be. I think OGWR might be its own entity. They will either accept or deny application for the tournaments to have world ranking points. So if those tournaments have no world ranking points, well, unless you're exempt from, you know, the Masters, or you're a past Open champion or US Open champion, unless you've got those exemptions, you're just going to slide off the world ranking grid, and you won't be, well, you're off the PGA Tour anyway, but your ability to qualify for the majors, and whether anyone gives a fuck about the World Golf Championships or not, is a separate issue. And my assumption is no one gives a fuck, but you can't play in them either, because you'll slide off.
My understanding on that, Donnie, is that so they've set in a bid to become officially world ranked, but it has to be approved by, it's not the actual OWGR. They have all these governing bodies behind him that have to vote on it. So that includes the PGA, the DP World Tour, the RNA, the USGA, and Augusta National, and then like the Asian Tour as well. So,
by the way, if you can hear a zombie downstairs, I'm currently above a bar and there's a live band downstairs. So sorry about that.
Hey, you might as well. What are you doing sitting up here talking to us? Go down.
Go down. Go to enjoy it.
I'm out the zombie.
Can you hear it?
Not really.
They've just stopped now. Oh, well, anyway, we can cut that bit out. But yeah, they're literally giving it socks down below. But yeah, look, like, where do you think it goes from here?
I think it takes off big time. I think it's it becomes, by this time next year, we'll be talking about, I don't know how high up we go.
And how about those fucking matchsticks? And how about those fireballs? Go fireballs.
To be honest, though, I actually do think the team events could actually be sick. And I actually hate myself for saying that, but I actually think the team events sound pretty fun, to be honest. I think it's, if they did like a live picking of the teams, I think it'd be pretty funny. I think it'd be cool and it'll be very different, and you know, the teams will change all the time because, you know, but different players, different tournaments, but you'll still have the same captains. I think it's gonna be very interesting. Again, as I said earlier, something for the PGA to really, and DP World Tour to really have a long, hard think about. Maybe we should try to incorporate some of these aspects as well, so we're not left behind in the stone ages of our golf. I don't know.
I'm Live Golf, and I think this is a viable idea, but I'm sure they've thought of it already. If they're going to really be innovators in the space, they should really go for it, and they should have an all-star weekend, if you like a weekend where guys are trying to smash, like hit drives and trying to smash.
Have a longest drive competition.
Yeah,
even
more quirky than that, like having them like hit flags that are hanging off balloons, or pop balloons with golf balls, or all that sort of crap, and have it all like skipping balls over water and trying to hit like trying to chip one from 60 yards, like do a slam dunk, all this real kind of fun shit, like really double down on the innovation of it.
And I'm sure it's in the works.
Oh yeah, like and sure, of course they'll have it in fucking Riyadh on some lake, and lads will be teeing off 100 feet above, and it'll all be floodlit, and it would be a laugh. Like what they're never going to achieve, and they're not going to do this in the short or medium term, they're never going to achieve sporting integrity. Gone. It's out the fuck. So whatever you think about the morals, park the morals, let's say you don't give a shite, and that's fair enough, it's your prerogative. The sporting integrity of it is currently blah, because no one cares who wins. No one even knows who's winning. Apparently leaderboards are a shit show. I'm sure they'll fix that. So sporting integrity is not what they have. And everyone who's turning up there is not giving their best because they're already paid. So they're just fucking like, you know, like dance monkey dance.
Yeah,
so
but it's day one, week one though, Donnie, isn't it? Like people would have said the same thing about the Premier League back in 1992, saying, look, this thing is a joke. This thing's never going to take off. It's a monopoly, whatever it is. And now look at it now, it's the biggest.
Oh, but because it's not a meritocracy at all. Like it's a total opposite of a meritocracy. There's no jeopardy. Do you know who they should sign up? They should sign up John Daly and get him arrive up fucking pantless with 7 cigars in his gob after 4 bottles of Jack Daniels.
I'd love to see Anthony Kim. Get me Anthony Kim.
That was the name, wasn't it? Yeah, Anthony Kim was the name.
Man, get out fucking boo fucking weekly. Boo. Back on the course.
There's enough booze to go around already. I'd say
there is, isn't there?
I don't need any more.
Listen, I you know where I stand. I think every point that's been made tonight has been valid. Entirely. 100%,
yeah.
And you know, if you're looking at like maybe Sergio Garcia was the guy who has it most transparently said, listen, this fits my life, this fits my family's life. He's a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. I don't like Sergio, by the way, he's an arsehole. But he's a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. He wants to spend more time with them, he wants to earn more money, and have 8 months off a year, and he gets to do all that. And he can just go, hey, look. It's not my fucking problem. And they all can do that. And they all are doing that. And you know, it's not their problem. But when you they become cheerleaders for the guy who's oppressing people, like, it kind of becomes their problem.
Just, you know? Yeah, just on that, Donny, on that, right? This is another, and I know you're saying, well, if one person's doing it, that doesn't mean you should do it, right? My problem is golf is such a drop in the ocean in terms of sport in general, right? The viewing figures on golf are, compare it to F1, compare it to the Premier League, the Champions League, week in, week out, minimal, right? So if Anthony is going to change, it's not going to be Richard Bland, you know, resigning from LIV Golf because the Saudi regime is horrendous. It's going to be someone like Lewis Hamilton saying, do you know what? I don't care if I'm on a contract by Mercedes. I'm not racing here. So you can fire me. You can do what you want. Like, what this is my problem is that the burden's on these golfers who have no real, in the world of golf, sure, they have huge influence, but in the wider world, like,
yeah, that's a great point as well.
It's like
a great
point. Why is Hamilton not standing up? Why is there's tennis on in Dubai every year? Like, why is Djokovic not standing up saying, listen, I'm not going to Dubai.
Bad example. Agree. He's like,
why is Messi and Ronaldo not standing up refusing to go to Qatar? Like,
it's for all example, fair.
You know? My problem is the golfers could be the most, you know, outspoken against the regime, everything, but it won't make a difference. The real difference is going to come through either footballers realistically this year at the World Cup, or let's fast forward to next season in the Premier League. Liverpool are playing Newcastle. Liverpool refusing to play Newcastle because they're Saudi owned. That's going to do something. But one single golfer saying I'm not playing it's a drop. It's basically the equivalent of Rory not playing in the Saudi Golf League or the LIV Golf, should I say, is the equivalent of me, you, and Brew not tuning into Newcastle against Liverpool next year because we don't believe.
I would argue in Rory's case it would be different. But Rory's
all right. Let's say
Rory's an exception. If it's Morikawa,
Daniel Berger.
There you go,
Daniel Berger.
Because that is the thing, like, as we kind of spoke about earlier, and not to go over all ground, but the whole morality thing, like, there's no, apart from your own sense of self and holding your own values, there's no advantage to being moral in a modern world. Like, there's fucking zero. There is none. The two things that happen is, one, you undermine your own opportunities, and two, most people just take the piss out of you for being too idealistic and, like, thinking you're Mother Teresa. So yep. There's no playoff. There's only one guy I can think of in recent times who actually took a stand, and it cost him everything.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're going to say.
Yeah. I think we all do.
Colin Kaepernick. Yeah. Only guy. And his gripe with the NFL was entirely fucking legitimate one. And in my mind, actually, there's two guys. In a different realm, not in a sporting realm, there's Edward Snowden, who didn't have, you know, they are fucking trailblazing human beings and amazing human beings for what they sacrificed for the greater good, and it got them fucking nowhere. Poor Edward Snowden has been stuck in Russia for 10 years, and no one's heard from him since the invasion. No, like, he's obviously, he can't say anything. Colin Kaepernick is only now being forgiven, even though he was right the whole time. So yeah, like, look. Yeah. I just feel depressed, and I just feel, you know, it's just sad and shitty that these lads are so transparently willing to just take the money. But
yeah, I know, I get that, Donny. But let's stop crucifying, and maybe not the best term to use. Let's stop crucifying, you know, Poulter and McDowell and Sergio. Like, look at your politicians. Look at Boris Johnson. Look at Joe Biden, look, whoever else is supposed to be leaders in the world, and what are they doing about all this stuff? So if they're not bothered fixing it, then golfers, me, you, and Brew shouldn't be the ones trying to turn down $100 million, you know, podcast sponsorship by LIV Golf, because, like, it's
you're right.
It's not our problem is ignorant, and it's never going to be.
It's also true.
You vote people into power for that reason. So
yeah, capitalism is predicated on the individual. It's an individualistic way of thinking. So it's entirely aligned to the society in which we live to care about yourself, care about who you love, care about your family, care about your friends, care about your community, and then fuck everything else because you can't fix everything else.
And look, in my own opinion, if I don't take it, the next fucking person will.
Yeah.
I may as well. And that's just that's a shitty, very simple, you know, it's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but it's true. Like,
but why then, Donnie, are these golfers getting vilified for saying I'm not a politician, I'm a golfer, when it's 100% true? And that's a line that's been used.
Because it's a moral question. As I said, it's but kind it's, of unfair
that's a fact that the moral aspect of it is, you could say, is whataboutry, as you the term you like to use. The fact is, they're golfers and not politicians. So, like, I don't get why.
I think it's because they could, like, they don't have to. They didn't have to say yes. They chose to. Yeah, they have the option of an incredible life. Or an incredible life plus 100 million quid.
But again, that goes back to my point of, because they're rational, and like, I really don't blame them for doing it. I don't, like, do I think they should have morally? No, I don't. If would I have said yes if I was in their position? Fucking 1,000,000% I would have. And that's, and again, if you wouldn't have done it, that's cool. And I genuinely, that's fair enough. I would have in a heartbeat. And I have to say, fair fucks to Tiger Woods for turning down $900 million, even though officially, as of today, he's now a billionaire. So fair play, Tiger Woods.
I think Tiger probably looked at that and went, "Oh, I couldn't.
Can't, yeah, can't do that. Yeah.
I've had enough.
Yeah,
I've had enough fucking drama. I just want to chill out with my young life."
And the fact that he officially turned a billionaire today, he's just going
billionaire, bro.
I thought he was a billionaire ages ago.
Billionaire.
He was world's first billionaire ages ago.
His morals aren't exactly the things to be hanging your hat on, I think, either,
that's,
are they?
That's Tiger looking at that situation and looking at the opportunity cost. Do I need another billion? No. Would I like another billion?
Like,
do I need another billion? No. Would I like another billion? Yes. Is this going to cause me a pain in the bollocks? Yes. I'm good.
Absolutely. For Tiger Woods, it would have been.
Oh, so it's your pain in the hole that would cause Tiger, like, Jesus, his head would be wrecked.
But well done, Tiger.
And I'd be like, stupid on me with my stupid fucking moral. I sound like Mother Teresa. I just think it's wrong, right?
And I've
lots of shitty parts of my character, like everyone else does. But
yeah, you prick.
Yeah, yeah.
But look, at the end of the day, I do genuinely think that we spoke very well. I think we spoke about a lot of aspects. We didn't just take it from one side. I think we did speak very well in terms of arguments.
Pat yourself in the back there, bro. Why don't you? Huh?
Yeah. Well,
I thought we were excellent today.
We were very good, yeah.
All right, look, we're gonna instead of fucking this little circle jerk going on, we're gonna thank everyone if you listened, if you're interested. Obviously, I mean, this is just like, we're speaking into the ether here. I really, really would love to get your views. Like, genuinely, I really would like to know what you guys think. Whether you think this is an abomination, whether you think this was an inevitability, whether you think that like, I think we all agree, G-Mac's a bit of a fucking dope, whatever about anything else. But please do let us know. Like, we're on Twitter and we're following this really closely. So we're on Finders Fairway on Twitter. And we're Fairway Finders Pod on Instagram, which we're not really too active on there, to be honest. But would love actually to hear what people think, because it is.
And Greg, if you're listening, drop us a DM there. We'd love to chat, and we can pick it up maybe next week.
And Greg, if you're on Spotify and you're watching our video, right? Watch, look a bit closer. Look, you watching? Fuck you, man.
That's great. Greg, I apologize on behalf of Donnie. That's it's not nice, is it?
It's pretty funny though.
Right, lads.
Actually, look, we leave it there. We'll be back next week with our regular podcast. So talk to you then, boys.
God bless.
Just take a moment to admire the fact that I just hit a fairway.
There's only two things that can happen. You can hit a good shot or a bad shot, so why waste time doing it?
And wherever I set course records or whatever, I would be barefooted, drunk, playing golf, making every 20-footer I looked at.
Right at it! Home! He's done it again!
This is the dumbest hole I've ever played in my life.
Come on then, Shane. Knock it close. Shane Lowry is the Open champion.